Looks like rain. It's like what?
No, no, it's like...
Jata nirvedo
tatra vedadam vedam
priyamana svayam prathai
priyamana svayam prathai
jarayo patavayubhyo
jarayo patavayubhyo
maranabhimukho
grahe tatra vedadam vedam priyamana svayam prathai Before meeting death, one is sure to become a disease invalid, and when he is neglected
neglected by his family members, his life becomes less than a dog's because he is put into so many miserable conditions. Vedic literatures enjoin, therefore, that before the arrival of such miserable conditions, one should leave home and die without the knowledge of his family members. If a man leaves home and dies without his family's knowing, that is considered to be glorious death. But an attached family man wants his family members to carry him in a great procession even after his death, and although he will not be able to see how the procession goes, he still desires that his body be taken gorgeously in procession. Thus he is happy without even knowing where he has to go when he leaves his body for the next life. 16. After these disease conditions, one's eyes bulge due to the pressure of air from within, and his glands become congested with mucus. He has difficulty breathing, and upon exhaling and inhaling, he produces a sound like hura hura, a rattling within the throat. Translation: the foolish family man does not become averse to family life, although he is maintained by those who he once maintained. Deformed by the influence of old age, he prepares himself to meet ultimate death. Thus, he remains at home just like a pet dog and eats whatever is so negligently given to him. Afflicted with so many illnesses, such as dyspepsia and a loss of appetite, he eats only very small morsels of food and becomes an invalid who cannot work anymore. In that disease condition, one's eyes bulge due to the pressure of air from within and his glands become congested with mucus. He has difficulty breathing, and upon exhaling and inhaling, he produces a sound rattling within the throat. So this is a continuation of the description of an old man in his last years, who is attached to living in the house. And so, as Prabhupada has pointed out in the purport, this is actually not the proper way to depart. And as I mentioned yesterday, one should take vanaprastha, which means one leaves the house which has children. So one of the rules is that one should leave when one is 50 years old. Another is one should leave when one's hair begins to get gray. Another rule is when one has grandchildren, that one should leave the house. And of course, another rule is that the wife or the children should be self-sufficient at that time. So this was set as an example by many great kings. Of course, it wasn't 50 years old in some cases. We see the case of Bharat. He left after thousands and thousands of years because he ruled for thousands of years. But nevertheless, we see great examples of kings who departed. They went to the forest when they saw that their kingdom was taken care of nicely by their sons. They departed. So that is the case of Priyavrata and Bharata and many other great kings. And we see another example of Nitisiddha devotees setting an example. So Yudhisthira and his brothers, when they heard that Krishna had departed, then they felt Parikshit should be given the throne and we should depart also. So they handed over the throne to Parikshit, who was capable. And then they marched off to the forest. Of course, theirs was a little different, their renunciation. Their renunciation was, let us walk. Leave the house and walk and walk and walk and walk and walk, and that's all, until we drop. So that's the type of vow one can take. One simply walks till death. Why? Because they felt that Krishna has disappeared. Our life is also finished. Our association with Krishna is what is important. That's the lila. And when Krishna goes, we also have to depart. So this is the will of the Lord, that we also depart when the Lord departs. So that was their way of doing it. And for others, the Lord made another arrangement. He had a battle for Kshatra, and so many people died. And then another way was the relatives, the rishis and the yadus, they fought with each other. And that's how they disappeared. So in this way, the Lord made different arrangements for different people. So the Pandavas were left after that, so there couldn't be a fight in that sense, because they were the kings. So their way of departing was, let us walk and just depart that way. And let's describe one after the other, they all dropped off like that, and they joined Krishna in his eternal pastimes. Anyway, the idea is that at a certain age, one should depart from family life and become more detached, because family life is a sign of attachment. In the case of the great kings such as the Manus and their descendants, there was no attachment. There was theoretical attachment because they were kings and surrounded by wives and children and palaces and wealth and properties, but because they were ideal leaders, they also had great knowledge and great renunciations. They actually weren't attached. But to set a good example, they carry out this process of becoming detached and taking vanaprastha life. So we see many kings do this. And of course, vanaprastha life is very severe, and if one takes it literally, it is very severe. So one lives in the forest, one wears bark clothing, which is very uncomfortable because it's very itchy. So it's got prickles in it, and wear that cloth, you know, bark, and matted hair. One survives on the roots and fruits in the forest. So one picks some wild fruits if available, or roots, and one survives in that way in a little hut, sleeping on the floor, on the ground. So it's a very, very austere life. But we see that Bharat did this. He went up to the Himalayas on the Gandaki River, and he was living alone, a very austere life in the forest, just taking things from the forest and surviving. And that is the literal way in which one takes vanaprastha life. So that was the ideal system. We see, of course, that even in the beginning of Kali Yuga, that is not being so common anymore. You do not see so many people observing in the same way, or even partially observing this type of life. There are a few people, great devotees do this, for instance. We see many older people, they go to a holy pilgrimage place and they live there, but not so common among the upper classes. The upper classes, the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas should do this. Shudras are not qualified for anything except Grihastha life. The upper castes can take Brahmachari life and study the Vedas, then they take Grihastha life, then they take Vanaprastha life. And the Brahmins take all four, they also take sannyas. So they are more qualified, so therefore they are allowed to take the sannyas ashram. But we see that this is not very common, in spite of the fact that there are so many people who are Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas. How many people we see who even get to the Vanaprastha stage? And how many Brahmanas take sannyas? Not many. Very, very few, in fact. Just as we have nominal Upanayana and so many samskars, where people get Upanayana, but they don't study the Vedas. Afterwards, many of them get the Upanayana when they get married. So they do the Upanayana and then they get married in the same ceremony to save all the money. So they have only one priest doing everything and meeting people once. So this way they have all the samskars at once. And they have the bare samskar. Everything's over. So it's a name only samskar. Yeah? So they don't learn the Vedas or anything. So similarly, they will have name only renunciation. So it's very famous that one goes to Banaras and then at the point of death one takes sannyas. And one is about to die because then you get liberation. So we have people taking sannyas as they're about to die. And some priest comes and gives them sannyas finished and then they die. And they hope they get, you know, mukti or something. But this is renunciation of name only. So this is what has happened in Kali Yuga. We don't see even the Vanaprastha life practice much. Well, what to speak of sannyas life among the Brahmanas. Okay? So, yeah, and even among the serious Vaishnavas, we don't see this taking place much. Okay? Even the Vaishnavas and so many Sampradayas, they're holding on to their life and living with the family members until they depart. They don't even take vanaprastha. What does speak of sannyas? So actually, sannyas is very rare. And the Sri Sampradaya, which has how many millions of followers? Maybe there's 5 sannyasis in the whole Ramdoji Sampradaya?
Maybe.
25? That's true. 25 out of millions. And in the Madhva Sampradaya, maybe there's less 8, 8 or 9 or 10 sannyasis among the whole community of followers of Madhva. It's very limited. In fact, it's not even open to most people, sannyas. It's very, very selective, even among the Brahmins. Certain families and certain persons take on it. So, in that way, and of course, if we take Shankar's line, how many sannyasis? Not many, also very, very few. And in Vallabha Sampradaya, none. None in Vallabha Sampradaya. Sannyas actually is very, very rare in Kali Yuga to get up to that stage. And also Vanaprastha is somewhat there, but also not much. So therefore, such descriptions as this will apply very practically to Kali Yuga. But we should not think that it's only Kali Yuga that we find such people. So we'll find examples. A very famous example is Dhritarashtra. He was getting old. Of course, he was blind from birth. But he was old, and it's also described in the Bhagavatam. He was also like a pet dog living in the house of the Pandavas. Pandavas were supporting him because he was elder and helpless and defeated. He had no place to live because all his sons were killed. So he was living with the Pandavas after the battle of Kurukshetra. And he was also old. So Vidura came. And he criticized him and said, this is not proper. You are also like a dog. It's like it's described here. You're eating the food, the remnants of food of other people. They supply you the food. You don't earn the food. So you're dependent on others for your protection and for your food. And you're old. So this is not the system of a kshatriya. You should not do this. Of course, all the upper classes shouldn't do that. They shouldn't defend him like that. Yeah. So he kept chastising him like this. And then, remarkably, Dhritarashtra actually obeyed. He understood, finally. And secretly, he went away. That is what is described here. The family members should not know where one goes. So secretly, he left in the night with his wife. And then the Pandavas looked for him, and they couldn't find him, and they were very disturbed. And later is described how he perished in meditation, and there was a fire, and he meditated, and then he perished that way in the forest, unknown to others. So for a long time, he was following very nicely this type of description, being old and infirm and dependent on others for his food, in spite of the fact that he should have been a proper kshatriya and everything. He was not doing that. But he also was enlightened by Vidura, and then he understood, and then he departed from the house in the proper way. So at least he was saved by Vidura, his half-brother. So what to speak of others who don't get the mercy of a great devotee like Vidura? Other kings and other persons will follow the same type of description and end up clinging to the house in old age, dependent on others, and then they die in this position miserably. So though the injunctions are there, as we go onwards, more and more people tend to ignore these injunctions, and ultimately, as we get into Kali Yuga, most people don't even know about the injunctions. What to speak of ignoring them. So that is the situation today. It is very interesting to know that in Kali Yuga there is some loyalty to Dharma, and therefore all the families are always concerned about marriage, so they have to get their children married. But no one is concerned about renouncing the house and taking vanaprastha or sannyas. You never hear about that at all. It's not even there. But the big prominent ceremony is the marriage. And the whole concern of the family is to save up money to get their children married. So this is you can see the distortion that takes place of the whole system in Kali Yuga, where people think they're following Dharma, but they've only taken one part of it, like the half chicken. So they take the part they like, and the other part they reject. So in this way, the system also becomes meaningless, just as half a chicken is also meaningless. Yeah? The man cuts the chicken in two because he feels, well, the front part eats the grain, so I have to buy grain to feed the chicken. And that's not very good because I want the eggs. I get to take the eggs and I sell the eggs. But I have to pay for the food for the chicken. So let's cut the chicken in half and I'll sell the front part because it eats too much. And I'll just keep the back part and get the eggs. But he did that. He sold off the front part of the chicken, waited for the eggs to come, and nothing came out. Backside. So, half a chicken is no good. You don't get the results. So if we take half of the varnashram system and we don't take the other half, again it is useless. So we take the marriage part, but we don't take the vanaprastha sannyas part. We take one ashram only. No brahmacharya ashram, no vanaprastha, no sannyas, only grihastha ashram, marriage. Everyone thinks this is fine, we're following Dharma. But it's only one part out of four. One ashram out of four people are following. The only defense, of course, is that in Kali Yuga, everyone is born sudra. So sudras are alone, their only qualification is marriage. Grihastha ashram, that's the only thing for sudras. So we can say that in Kali Yuga, this is what people are following. They are qualified only for taking grihastha ashram. And they don't worry about the other ashrams at all, in spite of the fact that those things are there. So in other words, everyone is literally following the role of a sudra in Kali Yuga. No interest in the Vedic knowledge as a brahmachari, and no interest in renunciation as vanaprastha or sannyasi. So, therefore, so-called dharma becomes meaningless because we have following some rules, but those rules never lead to detachment, or at least the danger is there. There is no detachment. That is not to say that marriage, according to varnashramic rules, is of no value. Certainly it is better than no marriage at all. So, at least if they maintain that, there is something, but because it is incomplete, it is like a body without a head, so to speak. So the whole system is not there, and therefore it becomes somewhat useless. So that is the situation we see. And because of that, therefore we'll have this quite prominent. All people in the house and still attached up to the point of death, and they become a burden on the family because the family has limited money, and then the family resents them being there because they're too much of a problem. But in spite of that, they have nowhere to go, and they don't think of renunciation, therefore they cling to the family very dependently and in great misery. So that is why the example of the dog is there. The dog depends on the family to give them needs. So the old people are like that. They don't have anywhere to go, they don't know what to do, so they cling to the family in spite of the fact that they're getting just some remnants. And in addition, they get old, and therefore they have to suffer from disease and weakness and so many problems, and ultimately they die. So this is not considered a very glorious death. Why? Because when they're dying, they're thinking of attachment and misery. Misery because we have to leave all the things we're attached to. So what is their next life? A similar type of life again. They end up in bondage in the material world. Yeah. So they, in other words, varnashram ultimately leads to mukti. But people follow like this. They end up in bondage. So the purpose of varnashram is being neglected. So this is exactly what Narada Muni tells Veda Vyas. Emphasize all this following karma and going through this for the people in the lower worlds, but They won't go any further. They'll get stuck. Instead of going for mukti in Varnashram, they'll stay in Artha Dharma Kama. And they won't go any further. So in this way, the whole system is defeated. So better to simply tell them about bhakti. And instead of getting involved in all this and becoming entangled and ending up attached, advise everyone to take to the process of bhakti, and in this way one very quickly destroys all karma, and one can go to the spiritual world. Unfortunately, qualification for bhakti is very high. It's very rare. So how do we make everyone in a devotee in Kali Yuga when everybody is less than sudra? So fortunately, yes, the qualification for bhakti is high, but it doesn't depend on whether you're a sudra or less than a sudra or a brahmana. It's completely independent of all of this, the gunas. What is dependent on? Faith. So if someone develops faith, that faith does not depend on gunas. So a sudra or less than sudra can have faith also. Then he's qualified for bhakti. So in Kali Yuga, the emphasis should be upon simply cultivating faith in the jivas of this material world. If they don't have faith, somehow we have to give them faith. If they have a little faith, we have to develop that faith. So two things are there. For those who have no faith, we have to give them some faith. And if they don't have faith, then they have faith, then we have to encourage that faith. The problem here is that we have an offense to the holy name called don't preach to the faithless persons. So how do we give faith to faithless persons if we can't preach to them? And if we do, then we commit offense. If we commit offense, then we lose our bhakti. So how do we solve that problem? So the problem for faithless people is that we don't preach to them, but we distribute the holy name, and we distribute prasadam, and we indirectly engage them in bhakti at the beginning. And by that, exposure, eventually they get faith. So therefore we expose them to the name of Krishna. We expose them to prasadam. We expose them to seeing the deity. That's what we have around the address. And this way, gradually, they can, Atma develops a little faith. When they get faith, then we can preach. Tell them all about Krishna and Jiramadi, etc. Before that, they can't listen, can't hear. So not preaching to the faithless persons doesn't mean we don't preach in one sense, but we do it in a particular way. So we preach using scripture to devotees, but we don't do that for non-devotees. They will reject it. They will throw it away. So there's many examples of that in America, that people distribute books in the street. They take a book and they rip it apart, or they burn it, or they throw it in the garbage, or whatever. So this way they're offending. And so it's very, very difficult to preach like that. It also becomes offensive. So if we just expose them to the holy name, Shadam, etc., then it becomes unfavorable. Then they can hear. And we see many examples of that also around the world. Simply by taking prasadam again and again and again, and demons suddenly develop a little favorability. And then they become interested. So this is how we preach to the faithless people. So in Kali Yuga, this is the process. We're not going to encourage them to do all this whole dharma and all these other things. What is favorable to bhakti? Yes, we do engage them somehow. And when they have faith, then we encourage that faith with more engagement in devotional service, following the different rules of bhakti. Predominantly karma with a little bhakti, we call it karma yoga still. And if we call it bhakti yoga, it's probably bhakti yoga. Maybe mixed bhakti yoga, but it's probably bhakti, so maybe karma mixed or bhakti. When it is predominantly karma yoga with a little bhakti, then we call it karma yoga. otherwise the terms become confusing. So by predominance. And if there's no bhakti, it is called asura varnashram, useless completely. And if it's got little bhakti, it's called daiva varnashram, a proper varnashram.
And here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he lived step by step, he put that just like a sannyas about going through the process of Varnashram Dharma.
What's that?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
yeah.
He is not follows that Varnashram Dharma.
He directly took sannyas.
Instead of, it is allowed, you can take sannyas from brahmacharya life, from grihastha life, or from vanaprastha life. It's not a breaking the rule if you, from grihastha life to sannyas. Now, of course, like in the Sri Sampradaya, do they go through? Does Sri Sampradaya go through vanaprastha?
No one.
But do they take vanaprastha?
No.
Yeah. And even the madhvas, they go from brahmacharya to sannyas. Mothers.
Yeah, it's okay. Sannyas, we took the sannyas immediately after marriage. But marriage didn't give a responsibility to sannyas. It didn't follow the
yeah, well, this is what the Sri Sampradaya does also. They go from grihastha and then they go sannyas.
He didn't fulfill the responsibilities of grihastha ashram. Oh. Immediately after marriage, he just took sannyas.
No, it wasn't immediately. And he didn't have any children.
Father
took sannyas,
old father mother
is there.
Now
he
got
married, his wife was
elected
to wife
and
then
he can
sell
it.
Yeah.
How
can
understand
this Ramanujan? He was even more severe. Yeah, he didn't take sannyas. But, so anyway, we see examples of this where they may leave the house, whatever. In the case of the Supreme Lord, of course, they can do anything and they cannot be criticized for whatever they do because it is perfect. So in the case of Lord Chaitanya, one can argue that, oh, he didn't take care of his wife or whatever. But she was taken care of afterwards. She had her maintenance, but of course, because she was also a pure devotee of the Lord, she had no needs. So therefore, she was not interested in eating and sleeping and all these things. So that was of no value. So in Lord Chaitanya's case, we have to take it only as a case of pastime. But we'll see other examples of this. Ramanujacharya left his wife, took sannyas himself. He did his own sannyas and then he left his wife. This, of course, was a little different because there was a problem with the wife. She insulted his guru, so then he felt this is very bad. So it was also quite useless and he left. So it's not the only case. It's not the only case. So there will be exceptions to the rule also. Even Vishnu Chakravarti left his wife, went off to Vrindavan. I think he got married, stayed one night, left, finished. Extreme example. So he went off to Vrindavan after that. So we do have examples of the opposite as well. That doesn't mean, of course, that they don't fulfill their duties. They also make sure that the wife is taken care of or whatever.
On the other hand, we have another understanding within ISKCON that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not recommend sannyas. Rather, he recommended the grihastha ashrama so that the preaching can go on well. How do we understand?
I don't think it ever says that anywhere in the scriptures.
Oh yeah, then check and read that all over the place.
Does he say it?
It goes to Kuruvik Kshetra, says you gotta get prophetic go home. Tells him to stay in his house, and it says every village he went to, he told him to be grihastha. And for 400 years, there was no sannyas in our sampradaya until it was reintroduced.
But then he says, "Grihe tako pane tako," whether you're in the forest or in the house, you can chant. It's not that he forbade it. And then we see that he had sannyasis around him in Puri, 10 sannyasis there also.
they were all previous to him. He was the youngest. After
yeah,
him, there was no. Yeah. I mean, we agree on that point. Right?
But they do have pronunciation because they're Babaji's. So, for instance, the Goswamis were higher than sannyasis,
yeah.
Like Paramahamsa sannyasis.
But not sannyas.
Yeah, well, yeah, the renunciation is there in any case.
That's
in other
true.
Words, because we reject Varnashram in one sense, Lord Chaitanya rejected it, even though he took sannyas according to that system, he also rejected it. So therefore the idea is that if we're going to renounce and become sannyasis, we're still in the Varnashram, so therefore let's reject everything and become Paramahamsa. And therefore we give up the thread, we give up everything, and then one becomes Babaji. So that is like the equivalent in the Vaishnava Sampradaya to that.
Yeah.
But there is renunciation. It's even a higher renunciation. Extreme renunciation. We reject all the Varnashram. All the markings of the Varnashram. No danda, no water pot, no no thread, no nothing.
So then the question is, are we trying to re-establish Varnashram after Lord Chaitanya rejected it?
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that's a controversial point. And we have, in one sense, he didn't reject it completely because we see that all of Lord Chaitanya's associates were grihasthas. That's also part of the Varnashram system. And they followed to some degree, and you know, they went through the samskars. Lord Chaitanya went through the samskars, and everyone else in there, you know, there were vaishyas or kshatriyas or brahmanas, and they went through their samskars, and they followed their rules of whatever. And Lord Chaitanya followed the rules of sannyas also. So in one sense, they all followed. And he never told them to completely reject, but if one is qualified, then one could, and then one becomes a Babaji and rejects everything. No? So we find that the sannyas ashram, of course, was not there, but we do find the other ashramas there. Probably to some extent, some people were brahmacharis and they were grihasthas, maybe some vanaprasthas also. But the sannyas wasn't there. Whether that was particularly because Lord Chaitanya said something, did he ever forbid it? Of course, sannyas is forbidden in Kali Yuga according to Smriti Shastras, but according to Vaishnavas, no, because Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, Madhva took sannyas, Ramanuja took sannyas, Shankaracharya took sannyas. So the argument given is that karma sannyas is forbidden. Then one renounces all activities, that type of sannyas is forbidden, but not the others. So that's the argument given for having sannyas in Kali Yuga. But we find that this was introduced by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he introduced that. Now whether that means that we should introduce Varnashram as such, that's not a question, because simply by having the sannyas doesn't mean that we're instituting the whole Varnashram system. But something of it is there, which may be favorable to devotional service, but not all aspects of Varnashram system. So already, as I said, the Brahmacharya and Grihastha and Vanaprastha were some degree there. So to add the sannyasa again, there's not a big, it's not really disobeying Lord Chaitanya in that sense. Lord Chaitanya, of course, did put a more emphasis on bhakti than Varnashram. So we have a choice, we have something to do. Do the bhakti rather than the Varnashram. And if you can do Varnashram, fine, as long as it's not contrary to bhakti or an obstacle or takes too much time or takes away from bhakti, you can do it. But if there is negative things, then it doesn't matter if one rejects it. One simply does bhakti and there's no loss. So probably the same emphasis is there on bhakti. So if Bhaktisiddhanta put the sannyas ashram there, we cannot really criticize that, saying he, you know, disobeyed Lord Chaitanya or whatever like that. Because the main purpose of that, again, was preaching Lord Chaitanya's mission. He says Lord Chaitanya took sannyas because people would respect him. And if he was a grihastha preaching, then people would probably, this the Mayavadis would not even speak to him. Who are you? You have to be sannyasi, we won't even debate with you. So therefore, he took sannyas for preaching. So Bhaktisiddhanta also had sannyas also in that part of his movement for preaching, rather than simply, let's say, renunciation or whatever, but rather for preaching within bhakti. So that ashram is related to bhakti rather than simply following Varnashram Dharma. One could say, of course, why didn't just have Babaji's instead of those? Because one could also do that. That, I don't know, maybe there's some reason why he did that. He could have had Babaji's, but then the thing about Babaji is that generally they don't live in temples or anything. They live out in Radhakund or somewhere by themselves, and they're, you know, solitary and things like that. So the mode of the Babaji is a little different. But then one could also argue that sannyasi should do that. Sannyasi should also be like that.
The six Babaji's did do that. They built temples and they started our whole movement. So they didn't behave in a like Gorkha Shodas Babaji.
That's true.
That's
an example. Well, the present ones, we can say, as it's come down generally, after the Goswamis. Well, they built temples, but they didn't live in the temples. They were still living in their Bhajan Kutis somewhere out in So it's still very, very renounced, in spite of the fact that they did that for preaching. But anyway, we see their example is they were renounced, but they were also preaching. So they built the temples for preaching, and they wrote books, and they preached to people. So they were not completely near Bhajana type persons. So that example was there. So one could say that, or that you could have this Babaji living in the ashram in Bhaktisiddhanta could have done that. But I think the other reason was there was a little bit of a war going on between the Babaji's and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So they would challenge his authority for giving Babaji or whatever, I think. So that's not, and it was somewhat disreputable at that time also. And there, because of that, there was this war going on between him and the Babaji. So maybe that's the reason why he didn't have it in his ashram. There's a few of them. Two Babaji's.
Sorry?
He made two Babaji's, I think. There was a few one or two he did. But.
Could we make the argument that both Bhaktisiddhanta and Saraswati took sannyas due to social circumstances?
Yeah.
And not due to shastric circumstances?
Yeah. For preaching, again. Of course, one can always argue the opposite. Well, a Babaji could also preach, you know, and we got respect among the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as a Babaji preaching also, and many are, some Babaji's are preaching, but then to organize and do other things, maybe that was another thing, and to get respect outside the Sampradaya from other groups, you could do that just as Baladeva Dibhushan wrote a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, more or less to counter, because other people would say, where is your commentary on Sutra if you're a Sampradaya? So, they say, you know, other sampradayas have sannyasis, you don't have sannyasis. What is this? You know, how you can preach and, you know, argue with them. So that we could say like that.
Yeah, that's why Prabhupada wanted sannyasis.
Yes. But of course we could argue in the West, nobody knows what sannyasis is anyway, so it doesn't really matter whether you're a grass or a wearing whatever color, doesn't matter. They don't know the difference. In India, yes, but other countries wouldn't really matter so much. So it wouldn't be practical in one sense, only among devotees. Or in India, perhaps, and then we'll see the distinction.
Up,
they don't know the difference either.
No, they don't have monks there.
They're married. Buddhists are married. Most of them are grihasthas.
But they have in Thailand.
Thailand has, but Japan doesn't have that group. That's the Theravada and the Mahayana, what are different. Sannyasis in Thailand. Are they married?
No.
Oh, Catholics aren't. Catholics weren't married. They're not married. Catholics are not married. No.
Yeah, but they don't follow any rules.
So no.
Eating and drinking, you know, unmeasurable items.
Yeah.
That's not.
Okay. They're not fully renounced. I suppose technically they should have been, but due to tradition, though, as they get higher up, they get more opulence in the church, so they get more and more luxuries until you get to the Pope, and he's got this huge, he's got a lot of wealth there. So it became a little bit opposite, even though the common monks were supposed to be renounced. When they promoted upward, then they got a lot of wealth and properties and whatever, and a lot of problems also.
The Vedic times and the modern times,
that of course is, we can say, one of the weaknesses or the dangers. That if you get all of these things, then there is the problem. So generally they avoided all these things. But the other problem is that if you do that, then this is more or less not preaching. You're doing it for your own benefit. So if one goes off to the forest and does all that, then basically it's for yourself only. So as we were saying here, actually Bhaktisiddhanta would do sannyas for preaching, not for simply going off for your own benefit. So therefore we have this idea of, you know, using things for Krishna. Still, the danger is there, and we see it as manifest in so many ways.
But Guru Maharaj, in the Vedic times, the situation was entirely different. Though the sannyasis and rishis lived in the forest, they commanded so much respect with the, the kshatriyas. Whatever the wealth they wanted, they just got it at their, whenever they needed. So as such, they were having the wealth, but they were not in possession of it. But they were able to command any time they get the wealth, whatever they wanted.
Well, yeah, the rishis and the sages would see it. They went to the court, and then they get honored by the king, and he'll offer them everything, but then they'll give it away. They won't accept it.
But today, the sannyasi cannot do that. He cannot go
and offer the rishis. There is no great kings who are going to give him anything. In most cases, it's not great kings who are going to give him great wealth that he can reject or whatever. Yes, a completely different situation.
I mean, he also had to divide the charity also. In the form of teaching Brahmins.
Even the Brahmins had said they got the charity and they gave it away, they gave it back. The king would give everything to the Brahmins and the Brahmins would give it away. So they didn't keep anything for themselves.
Robin Hood mentality.
Yeah.
Shastra say women, old people should be protected. How come when a person becomes old, he has to go to the forest with no one to care for him, even if he is a disease, even though he is dependent on the Lord? Is it not better that one renounced when he is healthy rather than old age when his body is weak? Well, that's what it said here, actually. Before you get old and decrepit, you go when you're in vanaprastha and you're not weak and diseased. But then you can practice renunciation and detachment from everything and have good, strong mind and concentrate on the Lord, etc. So that's the whole idea, before one is diseased, to do that. Inevitably, everybody's going to get old and everyone will get diseased and everyone will die, so it's going to happen sooner or later. But the idea of vanaprastha is to act as a medium between grihastha and sannyas, where one becomes more and more detached while one is still, you know, a healthy body. It said that one must secretly leave home. We see in ISKCON many devotees have left secretly to join the movement to practice spiritual life. Well, yeah, if there's impediments, then they may do that. We see in the Shastras in many places married life is condemned, but we have know that sannyasis and brahmacharis come from good grihastha. I don't know what that means. Oh, I see. Well, yes, married life is condemned if one does not ultimately become detached. And it is praised if it is followed properly. And so therefore it is said the grihastha who follows properly is also renounced. He is the best renunciate if he follows properly. Which means he does not become over attached and end up in this position later in his life where he's clinging on to the family to the last moment. So if one follows properly the rules of grihastha life, then gradually following those rules one will become detached. And then one will be qualified for vanaprastha and sannyas. So it is what is condemned is not all family life, but that family life in which one does not practice properly and one does not become detached. That is what is condemned.
So if one is
attached and more attached to material things than Krishna, then if one will die, one will fall for that. So the whole point of that vanaprastha is through that austerity, one should gradually become detached, and then in sannyas, then one completely leaves. One doesn't think about family anymore. So the wife is there in vanaprastha, and then there's no wife in sannyas, but there's no children in vanaprastha. So something is taken away, but not everything. So one becomes stronger and stronger, then one can take sannyas and then forget everything.
From the Vedic times, women were not working. They didn't have any finances, they didn't care about
Yeah, the wife would go to the wife would go to the children. Oh, yeah. Everything is different in Kali Yuga. It's very easy for men to take sannyas in Kali Yuga because the women are independent. Who could say that? But actually, no, it's not easy because everybody's attached.
But actually, the female is also supposed to practice renunciation when she goes with her husband.
In Vanaprastha, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So what is the point of a wife leaving her husband and earning here? That purpose doesn't serve.